Well, good morning to each and every one of you. We're glad you're here today, and thank you, if you're visiting with us, that you have come our way. It's always a big time of year for us, this particular week. I think the freshmen at A&M have to be here or move in, have other arrangements, and of course next week, week from tomorrow, you will start at A&M and at Blinn. You guys start tomorrow, right? Front row. Are y'all happy about that? I mean, anybody that's this way? Oh, Seth. Oh, okay. Sports? Yeah. I thought that might be the case. Well, I have a whole section in the sermon this morning. Pay attention. It's going to be about that. Good to have you this morning. If you are brand new students with us, we're glad you're here. If you already know you're going to place membership with us, then please, we have a directory sheet in the back, and we can go ahead and get that to you, and like to try to get that information out as fast as you can. You'll notice a lot of us have our name tags on, hopefully 80 or 90% of us do, and if you decide to be a member here, then you'll have one too, and that's just because we generally get 30 or 40 new students every year, and for all of us that are my age and slightly younger, have trouble remembering names, and so that helps us. And so we try to encourage that, and that's why we do that, and hope you'll be a part of that. And it's always an exciting time. We look forward to getting to know you. We see such change in many of you as you come here, you grow, you find new friends. Many of you, we might use the word blossom. I mean, sometimes we see people that seem to be pretty shy at first, and then all of a sudden they develop into somebody that becomes more able to speak in public and do a really good job at that, or whatever it is, leading singing or whatever, the girls teaching the classes in the back, helping out with that. It just is a great time of life, and it's an enthusiastic time for us, and it helps us too. I think we would be a very different congregation if we took all of you guys out. And I think it would be a good congregation, but I think it rises to another level because of that influx we get every year of so many college students and the relationships that you make. So some of you are excited about school starting again. Seth's the only one on the front row that is excited about that. You renew friendships. I'm going to have to push the button down here. I'm not disappearing, because I'm going to have to turn around and look if I can't see it on my monitor. There we go. So some of you are excited about starting school again. You're going to renew friendships that you haven't had over the summer. You're going to have many late-night video gaming parties, I'm sure. Some of you have come to learn to study, love to study, and learn stuff. Your parents are hopeful that you will get a meaningful paycheck at the end of that, that there's a connection between the degree and that kind of maturity. And then some of you guys have never seen this many pretty Christian girls in one place at one time. You came from a congregation where it was your brother, and that was it. And now you are looking at the best chance you will ever have of finding a godly Christian mate, and we just did that yesterday from Lubbock to Lance, and Shelly are here, and their son Ryan married Laura. I'm playing with you. I knew her name. I forgot her name the other day in class. I can't believe I did that. Anyway, that happens. You're at that time of life. Obviously, though, the girls have a harder time finding some guys. So they have to go as far away as Florida to find their guy. Some of you are not pepped up about school. I mean, you may have no friends right now. I don't mean that you're not a person that can't have friends. I mean that you just have come to a brand new situation. You didn't go to camp with any of these kids previous to this, and so you don't know anyone yet. And that can be very intimidating. Your parents are with you today, but they're going to be going back and leaving you here. And I mean, we watch it. I mean, it gets scary, and you get down, and freshmen go back all the weekends, you know, especially the first semester. If your boyfriend or girlfriend's back home, you'll go the second semester. But eventually you'll find friends. You work into that. Everyone starts school with challenges. And so I want to think with you this morning about some things that maybe we can think about spiritually. First of all, let's think about friendships. Are you ready for friendships? And by that I mean that most of the time we think in terms, don't we think in terms of this? We think in terms of who will be my friend. I mean, we come in order to find those, or we already have that. You have the Paisler group, which were all friends before they came here. And a lot of people do that, that come here. But you may think in terms of that. May I challenge you to think in terms of what Jesus would want us to think in terms. Who can I be a friend to? Who can I be a friend to? There have been some guys and gals in the back years. I've been here 12 years to watch them. Conrad Harkrider was one of those guys. Conrad used to work the crowd. It was just kind of fun watching him if you just stand back and watch. He didn't go to people. He and his friends that he was close to, yes, they had time they spent together. But when he was here, you would see him working the periphery, I say. Always working the crowd that's on the outside. The people that obviously have a hard time breaking in. They don't know anyone yet. They may be very shy. But you would watch him one-on-one. And isn't that a beautiful thing? Is that not what Jesus would want us to do? I mean, Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. Wouldn't you want that? You come all the way from Tennessee. You come all the way from some other state and you don't probably know anyone here yet. And so if it would be that we're like Jesus Christ, it would be that we want to reach out to them. The passage that I have there, Luke 10, 27-37, is of course the parable of the Good Samaritan. And the lawyer that answered the question, to love the Lord your God with all your, what's the greatest? To love your Lord the God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. He said, you've rightly spoken. Do this. You'll live. So he, wanting to justify himself, said, well, Lord, who is my neighbor? And then Jesus tells that great parable that basically is about what? To whom can I be a neighbor? Who was a neighbor to the man that was beaten? He said, the one that showed mercy to him. He said, then go and do likewise. So it is that we need to think in terms, if you're a young person right now, you need to think of the people that are outside your core of friends. And like Conrad used to do, look at the periphery and think about people that are having hard times. Who do we hang out with? We hang out with people that we get something out of it. We don't hang with the nerds and the geeks and the chuckles. We don't do that. We hang with the people that we get something out of it. But isn't that the selfish side of us and not the side of Jesus Christ? Who did Jesus Christ hang out with? He must have hung out with these people because that was the thing that irritated the Pharisees. They called him a friend of publicans or tax collectors and sinners. He hung out with the people that were not only in the periphery, they were on the outcast of the Jewish society. And in fact, one of the accounts, Luke 15 says, and the tax collectors and the sinners were drawing near to Jesus. That is saying to me that he was a winsome personality to people that were hurting. Are there young people here that hurt? Do we need to think more about the kids who need someone to show them love and care and just kindness? It's going to take time and trouble, guys and gals, to do that. And it's not going to be fun. There's no fun in that. But I'm going to tell you, there is a rich and deep thing that can happen. Wouldn't it be something if you were able to reach out to a person like that and draw them nearer into a relationship with Jesus Christ? And then watch a friendship blossom between the two of you that you never thought when you first approached that person would have been possible. But it's possible because of the relationship we sustain in Jesus Christ. And how great that would be if we thought like that. But like anything, if those are the good aspects of friendship, there are challenges to friendship. And that is that the wrong kind of friends can lead us away from Christ. You know the passage, 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. And we have watched it too many times. Young Christians choosing the wrong type of friends that lead them into lifestyles of worse and worse conduct. Guys and gals, it's easy to think you can hang with anybody. But the reality is the Apostle Paul is saying bad company corrupts good morals. Are we listening? You can't hang with everybody. Because somebody's going to influence somebody. And if we hang with the wrong type of friends, then most likely what's going to happen? Paul begins that by saying, do not be deceived. Do not be deceived that you think you can hang with those people and that they will not have an influence on you. Hopefully you're strong enough that the reason you are hanging with them is because you're trying to bring them to Christ. But that's usually not what we're describing here. It is that somebody is weak and they're not thinking about the right kind of people that they ought to be around, and sooner or later they are influenced in a bad way. So what's the solution to that? We read in your hearing this morning was Ephesians 5 beginning at verses 3 and on down through that section. And if you look at it, he says the sexually immoral, the impurity, covetousness, they're not to be named among Christians. There's to be a difference. Something is proper among saints. This is not proper. Be no filthiness, foolish talk, crude joking that are out of place, but let there be thanksgiving. Who should we be around? For make sure of this, that everyone who is sexually immoral, impure, is covetous, is an idolater, has no inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words. And then he says, at verse 7, therefore do not become partners with them. That is a sharing in, as fellowship is the idea of the word there, a sharing and partaking together in the same thing. We cannot be, there's a certain point where we can be with people of the world, but we are trying to draw them to Jesus. But at some point, if we're being drawn the other way, we are sharing and partaking in their lifestyle. Here's the distinction, walk as children of light. We have to always know that we are children of light. The fruit of the light is found in all that is good and right and true. And try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. And usually we end there because we think in terms of, well, that's what light is supposed to do. It's supposed to show the wrongness of the kind of lifestyle that others live. And that's a truth because people need to see that they are in darkness and not in light. For it is shameful, he says, even to speak of the things that they do in secret. But verse 13 and 14, I want you to pay attention to these verses. But when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible. You ever go down in the caverns, you know, like I can remember years ago in Carlsbad Cavern and the park ranger is talking to you, and man, that is darkness like you've never seen darkness. There's not a dark night anywhere as dark as that. Then all of a sudden he turns a flashlight on and boom, the darkness goes away. You're able to see. Things are visible. We understand what he's saying physically. What does he mean spiritually? For anything that becomes visible is light. Now that's interesting. What does he mean by that? Therefore it says, he uses Old Testament passage, awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Now we need to think about the fact that our character and our godliness are to lead people to expose the wrongness of what they're doing and that they become attracted to what the light is. But I think that's now what his emphasis is. Paul's saying, I think, something like this. It's not enough just to be light and be different from the darkness. If we bring the darkness to the light, then they can have the chance to become light. And that's what we're trying to do. Not just expose, but to draw. And so that people can be changed by the light. And many times in their life, they do. You watch it here. We watch because most people obey the gospel at your age. The time when you're changing and questioning everything and you're away from mom and dad. And that can go for good or go for bad. But when it goes for good, then great good can be done. Be sons of light then to lead the darkness to light. Secondly, are you ready for classes and learning? Obviously, I didn't have anybody on this front row that was ready for that. But let me tell. Oh, one person, Emma. How do we learn what Jesus teaches us? Well, at just an elementary level, it would be like this passage that Paul writes in Ephesians 3. I wrote in a few words by which when you read, you may understand. Now, in a very elementary level, what's he saying to them? Here's how important schooling is. In school, you're going to hopefully learn something about proper grammar. It doesn't mean you're going to use it all the time. And you probably say, yeah, and you are a big example of that. And I may well be. But you're going to learn how sentences work. And you're going to learn about the parts of speech. You're going to learn how a verb and a noun and adjective all and adverbs work with one another. And why is all that important? Because that's how any language communicates. And God has chosen to communicate with us in sentences and words that we have to first know the definition of them. Or even as we're fast reading of it, we don't have to. We have this amazing computer that says, I know what that word means, I know what that word means, I know. Sometimes we'll look it up because we really want to know. You learn that in spite of postmodernism, how to correctly understand what the author is trying to say to us. Because he has an intended message. Words are vehicles of thought, we often say. Vehicles that are to bring that same idea that's in the author's mind to the reader's mind. So that Paul says, when I wrote it down, you read it, you may understand what my knowledge is in the mystery of Christ. So how vital it is that you apply yourself in English class. All right? How vital it is that you pay attention. Because that's how you're going to be able to know what the Bible says. And so the work that you do at school has an important connection with how are we going to know the will of God. Wouldn't it be a terrible thing to not be able to read? You imagine there are folks that go now to Africa, and the only way those people know the truth is because somebody reads it to them. How do you know they're teaching them the truth? How can they double check it like the Bereans did that were more noble than those in Thessalonica in that they searched the scriptures daily to find out whether the things Paul was teaching were true or not? If you can't read, you are so limited. You're going to have to depend on the person that's reading to you that knows the truth. But what if they're reading, they're telling you something that's false? You have no way to check it. And so think about that's what you're learning at school. That's far more important than connecting with this world. The second thing that obviously classes and learning do is that the Bible commands us to work and to provide, right? You have the passage in 2 Thessalonians 3:10. If anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. Another passage, 1 Timothy 5:8, says that if we do not provide for our relatives, the way the English Standard renders it, especially the members of his household, we've denied the faith. That is the thing that Jude said was once for all delivered to the saints. This the faith, the words that Jesus had recorded down by all that is written, if we don't provide for our own, if we don't work, we're worse, he says, than an infidel, the old King James. We're worse than an unbeliever. We've denied the faith of Jesus Christ. So why are you here at A&M? Or why are you going through high school? Because you realize that a person that graduates from high school gets a better job than somebody that doesn't. And you realize that somebody that graduates from college generally gets a higher paying job. It's just statistics. You know them. That's why you're here. Because you know that it's going to convert to a better job in life. A better way to provide for you and your family. So let me say something especially to the guys. Please look at what you're majoring in. One of the things I watch here is that some of you major in stuff that does not convert into the real world. I'm not denigrating the fact that some of those degrees matter, but I'm going to tell you, A&M is a business like any business, and they're in the business of making money in the end. All of them are. They're public. And if you think about that, there are a lot of degrees that people end up with, and then what do they have to do? They can't find a job. Because it doesn't convert. Does it sometimes help you find a job? Yeah, because of your personality, because of the fact they know you can work at a level that's higher than somebody that doesn't have a high school diploma or just a high school diploma. They know you can, and so a lot of times you may get a job. But, man, I watch people struggle with that. Because sometimes those degrees just simply have no connection to reality, economic reality. And if you want to be a husband and a father to your family, you need to be the provider. So you need to think in terms of why am I getting this poli-sci degree? Am I going to go to law school? Am I going to be a professor? Where is it going to connect in the public world? And you may have good ways for that to already happen because of your internships and other things. But a lot of times, folks, people graduate with degrees and they don't have any connection to the real world. In Colossians 3, verse 23, he says, "Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men." So have a proper work ethic. The Lord's watching us. And He's watching you at school. And how you work there matters to Him. So we said that there's a challenge in friendship. There's a challenge in education, too. Because knowledge can puff up people. And we cannot be wise, as Scripture says, without Christ. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 1, there is that passage that says, this knowledge puffs up. And we know that about just knowledge divorced from God. Darwinian evolution and people that buy into that has a worldview, has a lifestyle, because many times the alternative, and you'll see sometimes they make these quotes, these guys that believe in it will just say the alternative is just untenable to them. Because what the alternative is there's a creator. What's alternative is there is a great designer. What's an alternative is that there's an intelligence that is so far beyond us, we can't even begin to comprehend it. We just pale into insignificance, and that's what the Bible wants us to think and know about the great God that we serve. Rather than acknowledge the God that created them, read Romans 1 and 19 through 25. Read those verses sometimes. And although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, but they bowed down to the creation. And then it led them into immorality. When they obviously have no connection to God, that knowledge that puffed them up and led them in that direction leads them into read the rest of Romans 1, all kinds of immorality. Because they are not thinking about God. For the first time at my house, we like to watch Family Feud. I like Steve Harvey anyway, but I love that show. First time. This past week, a guy was saying, and this is my lesbian sister and her wife and their kid. And it's just our time, isn't it? Now, that passage in Romans 1 says directly under that knowledge puffed them up and they did not bow down to God, but they sought out the creation, the very next immorality, the first one. Is homosexuality. That somebody thinks it's all about us. It's all about what we desire and want rather than the great God that created us. So knowledge, education has its downfall too. So now you need to pay attention, Seth, to wake up. Are you ready for extracurricular activities? You said you like sports. Well, it may be that you're not good at sports. Maybe it's band. Maybe it's drama. Maybe you're good at that. In my case, it was speech. All right, so I was on the debate team when I was in high school. Maybe for you, it's the Corps of Cadets. Maybe it's all of that I just said. You're in sports. You're in band at A&M, whatever. And all of it is about competition. All of it. I mean, this idea that everybody gets a trophy, it's just ridiculous. Because in the end of the day, that's not what you're after with Jimbo, are you? No. You want to be the best. You want to be the winner. You want to be the top. And everybody understands that. And this world works that way because it's God's world. Everything takes discipline and training. And so many times the Apostle Paul talks about that discipline and training that we need in the spiritual world, he draws from sports. He says, I discipline my body and keep it under control. Remember right before that, he talks about every athlete disciplines himself. I was at the wedding yesterday and I sat at a table. I was telling some of these young people, I sat at a table with them and we were talking about there's a young lady here today that's on the track team at A&M, and I said, oh, man, we've got another athlete. We've had athletes along the way. And I pointed at the person next to her, and I said, she's not running a marathon because I saw what she ate yesterday. And you couldn't eat what we ate yesterday and drink what we drank yesterday, sweet drinks and all that, and be running a marathon. You have to discipline yourself. You have to self-control. And so Paul says then spiritually, I do these things to my body in a spiritual way so that I don't become disqualified when I have preached the truth of the gospel to others. Or in Hebrews 12, he talks about run with endurance, the race that is set before us. So as discipline is necessary in athletics and in any endeavor, in band, in speech, in drama, in any endeavor, it builds character, doesn't it? At its best, it does that. But what's the danger of sports? What happens when winning becomes first in our life? Well, then you pay $7 million to a coach. When winning becomes the most important thing, what can happen? Well, that's when people use performance-enhancing drugs. If winning is most important. If winning is most important, we resent number one and number two when we're number three or lower. Instead of understanding that those things build character, that if I'm number three and want to be number two, and if I'm number two and want to be number one, I'm going to have to work like I don't understand work right now to do what that person is capable of becoming. So the challenge in extracurricular stuff is that whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. You're a gifted athlete, so you're here on a full ride scholarship. Do you do what you do for your glory? Or do you do it for God's glory? One of the things that we need to remember in extracurricular stuff is how easy it is for, if you're on the A&M football team, if you're a basketball player, if you're on the track, and whatever you do, that it can all be all about you. All about you. And nothing about God, who gave you the ability to be who you are. And to be as good as you are to even be at that level. It's a great passage out of Jeremiah. Jeremiah 9, 23-24. I want you to remember this passage. I have it on the screen. Thus says the Lord, let not the wise man boast in his wisdom. Let not the mighty man boast in his might. Let not the rich man, that's supposed to be boast, not boat, boast in his riches. But let him that boasts, boast in this, that he understands and knows me, that I am the Lord who practices steadfast love, justice, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, declares the Lord. Sometimes I see Facebook posts and they're so proud of the accomplishment of a son, a daughter, whoever they're dating, just go on down the line and read it. Read it through these eyes. And they're boasting about themselves. They're boasting about the accolades and the ability to do things from this world's vantage point, which, may I say to you, means absolutely nothing if it's divorced from God. If that son or daughter or person you're dating is so excellent in some area and they could care less about God, then what is the meaning of it? What's the use of it? If in the end they're going to stand before God and have all this glory that they did on the football field or in the basketball court, on a track, and had nothing to do with God, what meaning is there in that? Let me tell you a story. This is Eric Little. He was known in his day. He was one of the fastest men in his day in 1920s. He was called the Flying Scotsman. Won a lot of different races. A popular movie came out in 1981 called Chariots of Fire. Okay. So how many of y'all over here, you young people, how many of y'all seen the movie Chariots of Fire? Raise your hand. There are not you, Steve. You're not young. One person. See, y'all don't have good parents. If you had good parents, they would make sure that you saw Ben-Hur, and they'd make sure that you saw Chariots of Fire. So you're going to come over to my house, and we're going to watch Chariots of Fire. You need to see that movie. It tells a story of Harold Abrams and Eric Little, and that the race that Little was the best at was what we would call the 100-yard dash in our day, 100-meter. And in fact, he held the record in Britain. I think it was 9.7 seconds. He held it for 27 years in Britain before somebody beat him. But Eric Little was a believer in Jesus Christ. He would lose his life because of being a missionary in China during the time that the Japanese occupied it in World War II. But he won the 1924 Olympic Games, not in the 100 meters, which was his race, but in the 400 meters, because the 100 meters was to be run on Sunday. And that's the great part of the movie where he wrestles with. Now, I'm not saying he was right about this, but he believed it. He believed that Sunday was the Christian Sabbath, as he said. So he believed that he ought not to do anything but worship God on that day. And I'm not saying necessarily he was right. I do applaud him as convictions. I'd rather have somebody has convictions any day than somebody that doesn't. And Eric Little just wrestled with that and finally said, can you imagine, he has trained to be at the Olympics and knows he can win the race. Most likely he will be the gold medalist. And he gives it up because they're going to run it on Sunday. So the movie shows, whether it happened in reality or not, I haven't discovered, but the Prince of Wales, who will be the next King of England, comes in, and there's some kind of lord there, and he acts just like a lord. He won't even shake Little's hand. And the people that are on the committee of Britain's Olympic team, they're going to try to convince him. They're going to try to say, Eric, there's some way we can get you. But all the time they're working against conviction. Against a man that believes that Jesus Christ demands that Sunday be his, and his alone, and he's not going to violate it. In fact, at the end, one of them says it was guilty national pride that tried to overcome him. One of the guys said it in the movie. But in walks a fellow athlete that says, I was scheduled to run the 400. I've already got my medal. I just want to see you old boy run. Because I knew how good he was. Run the race in my stead. Run the 400. And they come to a solution. And he runs it. And he wins. And right before he goes to run, they hand him a note. Somebody hands him a note. And this is what it said. That's quoted in the movie. In the old book it says, he that honors me, I will honor. Wishing you the best of success. 1 Samuel 2 and verse 30. He that honors me, I will honor. In the end, that's what's going to matter. Eric Little went on to be a missionary. I don't know what he taught. I don't know what his positions were on things. But the core of his life, the connection of his life, was that God matters first and always first. Is that you? Is that what guards your life and governs it? Your subject, Heaven's Invitation, this morning. Jesus said, he that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned. If we can help you this morning, be his servant. Come as together we stand and sing.